The following is a class on the Srimad Bhagavatam, 7th Canto, Chapter Number 15, Text Number 69, given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Das Adhikari, recorded on July 10th, 2011, in Honolulu, Hawaii.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Aham Pura Abhavam Kaschit Gandharva Upabharhana Namna Atite Mahakalpe Gandharvanam Susamata Aham Parabhavam Kaschid Gandharva Upabharhana Namna Tite Mahakalpe Gandharvanam Susamata Aham Parabhavam Kaschid Gandharva Upabharhana Namna Tite Mahakalpe Gandharvanam Susammata. Aham, I myself, Pura, formerly, Abhavam, existed as Kaschit Gandharva, one of the denizens of Gandharva Loka. Upaparhana, Upaparhana, Namna, by the name Atite, long, long ago, Mahakalpe, in a life of Brahma, which is known as a Mahakalpa, Gandharvanam, among the Gandharvas. Susammataha, a very respectable person. Translation and purport. By His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedantati Dandiko Swami Maharaj Prabhupada. Long, long ago, in another Mahakalpa, millennium of Brahma, I existed as the Gandharva known as Upabharhana. I was very respected by the other Gandharvas. Srila Narad Muni is giving a practical example from his past life. Formerly, during the previous lifetime of Lord Brahma, Narada Muni was one of the denizens of Gandharva Loka. But unfortunately, as will be explained, he fell from his exalted position in Gandharva Loka, where the inhabitants are extremely beautiful and expert in singing, to become a Shudra. Nonetheless, because of his association with devotees, he became more fortunate than he was in Gandharva Loka. Even though cursed by the Prajapatis to become a Shudra, in his next life he became the son of Lord Brahma. The word Mahakalpe is described by Srila Madhvacharya as Atita Brahmakalpe. Brahma dies at the end of a life of many millions of years. The day of Brahma is described in the Bhagavad Gita, 8.17, Sahasra Yuga Paryantam, Haryad Brahmano Vidu, Ratram Yuga Sahasrantim, Rantam, Teho Ratta Vidojana. By human calculation, 1,000 ages taken together is the duration of Brahma's one day, and such also is the duration of his night. Bhagavan Sri Krishna can render or remember incidents from millions of years ago. Similarly, his pure devotee like Narada Muni can also remember incidents from a past life millions and millions of years ago. Vandeham Sri Guru Shri Jatha Parakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamsha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Ragana Tanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadaitam Savadutam Parijanas Shri Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakanvitamscha. So this is a great encouragement, actually, that even though in his previous lifetime he got into some difficulty. In the next verse it will describe how he was very popular. He was a pop singer in the heavenly family. It's like we have the Beatles here. They were a sensation, you see. He was like a beetle in the heavenly planets. All the women were going crazy over him, you see. So in this way he was carried away by lusty desires, you see. Beautiful voice and beautiful women everywhere, you see. Carried away, enamored by this lifestyle as a pop singer in the heavenly planet. So, in this way, he was described here, he was cursed by Prajapati and to become Shudra. But because he was very fortunate to get the association of the devotees, even though he was in a very fallen position, a Shudra. Because of that association with devotees, he became the most elevated Narad Muni. So this is a great hope for us who are very fallen people, you see. Carried away by by lust, carried away by greed, by anger, by envy, illusion, madness. You see, it's a great encouragement for us fallen souls to see how Narada Muni, so much enjoying the material life and then being pushed down and as a punishment for his sinful life and then coming up as the greatest Narada Muni. It's a wonderful description there in the first canto of the Bhagavatam, how he got the association of the Bhaktivedantas during the Chaturmasya, rainy season. The sages, instead of traveling about here and there, they would stay in one place. So it just so happened they were staying nearby his home in the forest. So he would go there and he would get the remnants of the prasad of these great sages. So this was the greatest blessing in his life, to get that mahaprasad of the Bhakti Vedantas. From this Mahaprasad, you see, he got the Krishna consciousness. Just like if you eat the food of some diseased person, you eat his remnants, you get his disease. So this is also a disease in that sense. This is a very nice disease, Krishna consciousness. So if you give the remnants of a Bhaktivedanta, or one who is following strictly a Bhaktivedanta, you see, then you get that mercy, as Narada Muni got that mercy. Became liberated soul. That is the beauty of Krishna consciousness. Even while one is within this material existence, you can become a liberated soul in any condition. You can be a traveling preacher, you can be a vajari, you can be a businessman, a housewife. In any position, one can become liberated soul. This is described very nicely by Srila Rupa Goswami. Iya yasya herera dashe karmana manasa gira nikala sapyavastasu jivan mukta so uchite. 1-2-187 Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. If one engages his body, mind, and words in the service of Lord Sri Krishna, then he becomes liberated soul in any condition of this material existence. So you see, what we normally think for being happy, we have to change our position here. Well, I don't have enough money, I don't have enough prestige, I don't have a good look enough, my wife isn't good looking enough, or whatever it may be, I don't have a fancy enough car, or whatever it may be, you see. We think that by adjusting our material situation, we can become happy. But actually, you can never. There's no adjustment you can make in this material world to become happy. There's none. Forget it. Even if you can adjust all the way to becoming Brahmanji himself, he's in the topmost position, you see. Even as Brahmanji, you cannot enjoy. What does Krishna say? Abrahma bhuvana loka punaravarti narjuna mamupechita konteya punar janmana vijite. From the highest planet in this material world, all the way down to the lowest, and everyone in between. Every single place you go here in this material existence is simply miserable. Dukkaliyam. There's no happiness. So what is the use of putting so much energy in trying to elevate ourselves within this material existence, when all you're really doing is going nowhere? You're just spinning your wheels, going nowhere. Therefore, those who are actually intelligent and philosophically inclined, they endeavor for that purposeful end which is not obtainable by wandering throughout the planets and the universes of this material existence. They simply reconnect with their original nature, which is eternal, full of knowledge and full of bliss. Satchidananda. All you really have to do to achieve the topmost happiness, the topmost perfection, the topmost success, anything you could ever want, and everything you could ever need, all you got to do is be who you are. That's all you have to do. They say, you Hare Krishna people, you're a dangerous cult. You're trying to bring... No, all we're saying is, be who you are. My dear sir, you see, they say, what is your philosophy? Our philosophy is simply know who you are and be who you are. That's all. We're not trying to impose anything on anybody. We just want you, sir, to know who you are. That's all. Do you object to knowing who you are? No, I don't want to know. Well, sir, if I told you that you were your actual identity, you were the son of the richest man in the whole existence, would you be interested to know who you really are? Okay, yeah, tell me. You're the son of God who owns everything. You see, Bhoktaram Jagatapasam Sarva Lokamadheshvadam. Your father owns and controls everything. You forgot that you were his son, and therefore you're suffering here in this material existence. But I wanted to bring you back to your father, so you can be reconnected with your actual nature, your actual identity, you see. Simply got to know who you are and be who you are. We went time in the check-in line in flying from Nandi, Fiji to Los Angeles, and big, huge queue. And some atheistic fellow came up with it, saw me in my robe, you know, in my tilak, and he said, what's your philosophy? Ha ha. You know, he's getting ready to smash me. And I told him that. I said, know who you are and be who you are. And he went, couldn't say a word. Couldn't say a word. Our philosophy is simply know who you are and be who you are. That's all. We'd like you to know who you are, and then we'll tell you how you can actually be who you are. You see, right now, my dear sir, you're actually suffering from amnesia. But there was an experience in Dallas. I read in the newspaper One man in Dallas, he was walking around the neighborhood, you know, regular middle-class American neighborhood, suburban neighborhood, you know, he was out taking a walk in the neighborhood. And some weird thing happened in his chemistry in his brain, and he went into complete amnesia. He forgot who he was, he forgot where he lived, he didn't know anything. He didn't had no wallet with him with his name on it. He had no idea who he was or where he lived. And he roamed the streets of Dallas for weeks, living as a street person. He was a well-to-do, wealthy guy, you know, in a well-to-do, upscale neighborhood, but he became a street person because he forgot who he was. But then one day, one of his friends drove by and happened to see him. "Oh, George, we've been looking for you. Get in the car. I'll take you home," you see. So then, you know, they brought a psychologist in and, you know, they did the whole thing to help him reconnect with his identity. So that's what all we're doing, you see. In this Krishna Consciousness movement, we're just helping people out. Here they are, the sons and daughters of the wealthiest, richest, most powerful, influential person in the whole existence. There's no reason for them to suffer in any way, in any time, place, or circumstance, to suffer in any way. I mean, if your father is rich and he's powerful, he's influential, you have no problem, you see. Because people have forgotten who they are. Instead of remembering, you know, Jivaras Rupa Hoy Krishna Das, instead of remembering that I'm the servant of God, they've forgotten. They're thinking, I'm so-and-so. I'm this guy or this girl here in this material world. I'm this body. No wonder people are so miserable. You know, people, they're taught from the very beginning, you're a boy, you're a girl. Now be a good boy and be a good girl. You're being taught from a little childhood to be your body, actually. Be a good boy. Be a good girl. Didn't we hear that when we were kids? We were being taught to be your body. Now you must be your body. That's impossible. You cannot be your body. No wonder we're frustrated. No wonder we're miserable. We're trying to be what we are not. It's crazy. It's insane. Absolutely insane, this whole culture we're living in. It's crazy. The leader, all the way from the leaders, the topmost leaders, every echelon in the society, people are insane. They're crazy. Mudha. Is it? Foolish like asses. So, if we are fortunate, like Narada Muni was fortunate, to get the association of Vaishnavas, as we are getting this wonderful opportunity, he associated with the Bhaktivedantas, we get the association of the greatest Bhaktivedanta. His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Chi Dandi Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada, and his followers. Those devotees who are following Prabhupada, they carry the Shakti of Prabhupada. That's why someone can meet a book distributor on the street and become absolutely transformed, because that book distributor is carrying the potency of Srila Prabhupada. The books of Prabhupada, the teachings of Prabhupada, a love for Prabhupada in his heart. So that Shakti, that Bhaktivedanta Shakti, you see, it's distributed throughout our movement. Anyone who is sincerely following Prabhupada, they carry that Bhaktivedanta Shakti with them. And anyone who contacts them, you see, they become blessed with that mercy of Srila Prabhupada. Just as Narada Muni got that, the mercy of the Bhaktivedantas, you see, that Bhaktivedanta mercy is available for the whole world. So the more we can share this wonderful mercy of Srila Prabhupada with everyone, the whole world will become transformed. There'll be no more troubles. Prabhupada told us that in San Francisco. He said, "I'm traveling all over the world, and I'm seeing that in every country they're imitating your country by building these skyscraper buildings." He said, "Now if you will simply chant and dance in the ecstasy of emotional love of God, and the whole world will follow you and there'll be no more problem." So, I love that term, emotional love of God. Sometimes it's not supposed to be emotional, you know. But that's the Mayavadi philosophy. Kill emotions. The Mayavadis want to kill emotions. You must become emotionless, you see. No feelings. You know, I've heard of love. I've heard that word before. It's sleeping in my memory. I don't want to hear about love or emotions. No. Krishna consciousness means to awaken spiritual emotions within your heart. To learn how to feel love for Krishna, to feel love for Guru, to feel love for Vaishnavas, you see. That is Krishna consciousness. Emotional love of God, Prabhupada. Just see the emotions. We were chanting the Shikshastakam. Just see the emotion of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. You see. We want to have feelings. Spiritual feelings. You see. We want to awaken these spiritual feelings within the heart. Krishna consciousness means to have feeling. To have care, to have concern, to have compassion. This is Krishna consciousness. Not to become impersonal. One time, my godbrother Shama Sundar became very sick. And no godbrother would take care of him. Prabhupada heard about it. He was very unhappy. He said, I would have personally taken care of you. You see. Krishna consciousness means to love. It means loving dealings. I just gave a whole a two-day seminar in Sydney on loving relationships. We thought for 8 hours we just talked about loving relationships, different aspects of loving relationships. Such an important thing. I remember when that first came out, I was in Gainesville with Sureshwar. We got a manuscript of the, hadn't been printed yet, we got a Xerox copy of Upadeshamrita. Remember that? And I read about that verse about the six loving exchanges and went, wow, this is really great, you know, this is fantastic. Sometimes devotees would say, you know, love was bad, you know, it's material. But you're supposed to be Krishna conscious. But that's called Kanishta Adhikara. Yes, I bow down to the deities, but, you know, those devotees, stay away from those devotees. That's called Kanishta Adhikari. He bows down to the deities, but he doesn't want to bow down to the devotees. That's Kanishta Adhikari. He's called a materialistic devotee. And it's interesting to note, according to Prabhupada's description in the Nectar Devotion, the second class devotee, the Majjhama and the Uttama, first class, they can never fall down. So it makes you wonder, well, when a devotee falls down, what was his position? According to that, he never made it completely get out of the third class category, you see. He never completely made it out. Maybe he's in a, you know, transitioning. But actually, when someone is solidly situated, as a Majjhama Bhakta, Prabhupada explains, they will never fall down in Krishna consciousness. Why? Because a Majjhama, he has loving relationships. He knows how to love Vaishnavas. He knows how to have mercy on the ignorant people. He knows how to avoid the blasphemers also, not waste his time trying to, you know, be like a barking dog with some blasphemer. He knows not to waste his time in that way. And he's completely surrendered to Krishna, you see. So if we can try to awaken these feelings by engaging in service to the devotees. Someone says, well, I don't feel any love for the devotees. How can I possibly love them? But actually, you already have the love, Prabhu. So they're within. You got an unlimited reservoir of pure loving feelings within your heart. You already have it. All we have to do is engage in service, you see. Serve the devotees. Serve them some prasadam, you see. Reveal your heart to them. You see, engage in these loving exchanges with Vaishnavas, and then lo and behold, what will happen? Those loving, that tendency to love Krishna, that tendency to love Vaishnavas, that will become fully awakened. Gradually, 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 it will become manifest. Well, some of you say, well, no, I just want to love Krishna. It's not enough. Can't I just surrender? Krishna just says, surrender to me, so that's enough for me, thank you. I want to stay away from the devotees. I just want to serve Krishna. But what does Krishna say in the Adi Purana? Ye me bhakta jana parata, na me bhakta shtate janaha. Mad bhakchanam che ye bhaktas, te me bhakta tamamata. He says, the one who is my devotee, O son of Prita, na me bhaktas. He's not my devotee. But the one who is the devotee of my devotee, he is my real devotee, you see. We have many people say, well, you know, I don't want to take a guru. You know, I don't trust anybody anyway nowadays. These ISKCON gurus, I don't trust them. So I'll just have Prabhupada. That's good. Now do what Prabhupada said, though. Prabhupada said that the new devotees who come, they would become disciples of his disciples. That was Prabhupada said in May of 77. So I just have only, I trust only Prabhupada. Well, you need, then if you fully trust him, then you have to trust him to be able to manifest his potency in at least some of his followers. You have to trust him to do that. And then you have to dutifully follow Prabhupada's instructions, you see, to become the devotee of the devotee. Even amongst the God brothers, we are all disciples of Prabhupada. We feel that how we like to feel that we're devotees of our God brothers, you see, that I am your servant. We like to feel that way. We like to bow down at the feet of our God brothers, that I am your subordinate servant. We like to feel that way because Prabhupada wanted us to be in that mood. Not that we'd only take instructions from him. He wanted us to be the humble servants of his servants. Even amongst the God brothers, he wanted like that. I remember one God brother, he was not like in that mood. He was, no, I only take from Prabhupada, you see, instructions. So finally he had one darshan with Prabhupada in Los Angeles. Actually, at that time he was keeping a mustache also. Prabhupada was wondering, why are you keeping a mustache? He said, well, my disciples are clean shaven. He said, well, Prabhupada, when you were a householder, you had a mustache, and I'm a householder. Prabhupada said, that was before my diksha. So anyway, this devotee had many, many complaints about the ISKCON movement. He had many, many complaints to Prabhupada about the ISKCON. So Prabhupada gave him a very heavy instruction. He said, just go earn money and enjoy it. Remember Jamadagni? Huh? Just go earn money and enjoy. That was the order. In other words, get out. Just go get out. That's what Prabhupada was basically telling him, to get out. Because he was so critical of every single devotee. He was the first devotee I heard criticize the GBC. He said, GBC man's got a big chip. That's what GBC stands for. And in English, that's... For, you may not know what that means. A big chip on the shoulder attitude means a very negative attitude. Proud, haughty, negative attitude. It's got a chip on the shoulder attitude. So he said, GBC means got a big chip. In other words, I've got this puffed up, negative attitude. So he says that's what GBC means, a puffed up, negative attitude. That's what it stands for. So Prabhupada just told him, go out and, you know, earn money and enjoy. Prabhupada wanted us that we would work within the institution that he created. Now, it's not always easy, at least from our perceptions, it's not always easy. Prabhupada said, tolerable or intolerable, one must tolerate and remain within the society that he created. He said, actually, there's nothing intolerable. But if you think it's intolerable, still you must remain. That was Prabhupada's instruction. People say, well, there's been so many problems, you know, this fall down and this scandal and this thing and that thing. How could I possibly stay here? I mean, but you know what? Prabhupada said, ISKCON is my body. So, even if you say, well, the body of the spiritual master now, the ISKCON body is sick. Does that mean you run away? If Prabhupada became sick, would you abandon him if he got sick? No, we would run to his side and nurse him back to health, you see. So even if someone says, well, ISKCON is sick, there's so many deviations, so many fall down, there's this thing, that thing. No, that means you run. You run to ISKCON and do everything you can to rectify whatever is the problem may be by your sincere service attitude. You see, that is love for Prabhupada. That is love for ISKCON. So in this way, if we take advantage of this wonderful facility, that Prabhupada has given. You see, we really need to stick together, because alone we don't have the potency. If we split up, you know, I have my little ashram here with my disciples, and everyone goes off and does their own little thing, we lose our potency. We don't have Prabhupada Shakti anymore, you see, because we're disobeying his instructions. It's like the Gaudiya Math, they lost that Shakti. They didn't stick together. They were ordered to by Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur. So we stick together faithfully in the instructions of Srila Prabhupada and tolerate whatever may appear to be intolerable, which is actually not intolerable. If we stick together and serve the mission of Srila Prabhupada, then we will, united we stand, united we fall. One stick, you can easily snap it. A bundle of sticks, you can't break it, you see. If we stick together, you see, that word came out of the labor union when in Poland, the Solidarity Party, you see. ISKCON Solidarity. That's what we need, you see. Solidarity means you're solid, you're together. You stick together tightly, and that makes you very solid. Solidarity. We need more and more ISKCON solidarity, you see. By that solidarity, ISKCON will be a juggernaut. It's like we have juggernaut, you know, the Britishers, they saw this juggernaut deity in India. So they coined the word juggernaut, which means a irresistible, powerful force, because they saw these huge carts coming down the roadway there in Puri. It's huge carts, you see. A juggernaut. So ISKCON is actually a juggernaut. If we actually stick to the orders of Srila Prabhupada, we have that solidarity, you see. Not a bunch of guru cliques, but one solid movement. Prabhupada's family, we stick together, then this movement will be a true juggernaut, an irresistible force which can take the leadership role on this planet, you see. Right now, it's very nice. It's like our Bhaktivedanta College in Radhadesh. They are connected now with some, I think it's Leeds University or something. It's very good.
Changing?
Anyway, it's nice in a sense to get connected and get some, you know, academic credentials that are recognized in academia. That's good. But when our movement is really successful, you see, the colleges and universities will have to be certified by ISKCON. You see. When Harvard has to come to ISKCON and beg for accreditation, you see. That will be the real success of our preaching. Harvard, Yale, Oxford, can you please accredit us so we'll be recognized as a bona fide educational institution? That will be the real success of our preaching, you see, in the future. Just like Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur said, when the high court judges wear tilak, then we're successful. So when all the universities in the world have to come to ISKCON to be accredited, to be recognized as a legitimate educational institution, then we know we really, our preaching has really been successful. And the governments also. For a government to be recognized as a legitimate government, it's to be recognized by ISKCON. That will be a real success, our movement. You know? The United States government says, can you please recognize us as a bona fide government? That would be the real success of our movement, you see. So we have a very nice opportunity now to serve Prabhupada, serve this mission, to awaken that love of God within our heart by quality chanting, by quality relationships with devotees. In this way, we can have the most glorious, exciting lives, living on the vanguard of the greatest spiritual revolution in the history of the universe. So are there any questions? Yeah.
You mentioned quality relationships with other devotees.
Yeah.
Perhaps you have some practical advice on this subject.
Yes, I have tons of practical advice on this subject. Prabhupada gives very good advice in one purport. If a Brahmin becomes angry at you, then you should pacify him by smiling face and sweet words. In other words, you don't be in a retaliatory mood. If some devotee gets upset, don't you get upset. You see what I'm saying? Then that just, it's called escalation. You know, you get a little angry at me, I get a little angry at you. You get a little more angry at me, and I get even more angry at you. You see? No, you just got to nip it. Thing is, you have to be exemplary. Yad yad atariti shrishtas tattarevi tarojana. Se yad pramanam kurute lokas tadunivartate. Whatever a great man does, the common people follow in his footsteps. Whatever standard he sets by exemplary acts, all the world pursues. So if devotees are acting, you know, and not, you know, they get angry or they get upset, the best thing you can do is be transcendental to them. Don't get angry and upset with them. Keep a cool head. Always keep a cool head. Be very tolerant. More tolerant than a tree. Ready to consider yourself lower than the broken beer bottle out there in the Honolulu street, you see. Ready to offer all respect to others without expecting even the slightest tinge of respect for yourself. You see, then you'll have good relationships with the devotees and with the holy name too. That the easiest thing to do is remember that prayer of Sikshastakam. That prayer will tell you how to have a perfect relationship with the devotees and a perfect relationship with the holy names. Those go hand in hand. You cannot go more deeply into the holy name than you have gone into relationships with Vaishnavas. To whatever extent you're able to actually truly love Vaishnavas, only to that extent can you develop attachment for the name, and it goes, they work together. You see, because what is the first offense against chanting? To be disrespectful to devotees. It's the first offense against the name. So your advancement in chanting will be seen by how loving relationships you have with devotees. You see, someone who can't get along with devotees, I guarantee you their job is no good. It's no good. They can't. If somebody does not have good relationships with Vaishnavas, they can't taste the nectar of the name. They won't get Namaruchi. They cannot get Namaruchi. So it's in our self-interest to love each other, even though it's not always easy. We all know it's not always easy. Because we do disagree, and sometimes it's just more than we can handle. It's a fact. We've all been around, we know. But we have to, Krishna help me. Please, Krishna, help me develop humility so I can always, even if I feel the devotee has mistreated me, you see? He mistreated me. He was rude to me. He wasn't respectful. Still, you should respect him. Honestly, I have some god brothers who were very, very offensive to me. So how do I react to that? I try to see their good qualities and worship them within my heart. In spite of the fact that some godbrothers have been very, very offensive to me, I'll be honest. Extremely offensive. But do I pay that back with being offensive? No. I pay that back, but let me worship their divine qualities. I try to think, well, how would Prabhupada see that devotee? You see? What would his vision of that devotee be? I try to always see like that. Not my, limited vision. How would Prabhupada see this person? How much service he has done, how much sacrifice he has made for the mission. So in this way, these are some pointers. Any other question? Yes, Prabhu.
You were talking about how we shouldn't leave this gun, and you gave the example of Prabhupada's body. If he's sick, he wanted to recover as soon as possible. So this gun needs some help in regard to, say, like the Varnashram. We don't have that, so it's hard to be sometimes a big part of ISKCON when you're trying to survive, because we don't have a facility where we can live simple and think high all the time. It's like, DM, it's very limited.
So, Yeah, we don't really have a Varnashram society where you can everybody can plug into it and live, earn their livelihood within the Sangha. That's a fact. And that makes it difficult. It does, there's no doubt. There are many devotees who would not like to work karmic jobs, you see, who would rather just have some way that they could be a part of the society and a devotee community on a full-time basis without having to go outside and work. That's a thing. And it's an immaturity of our society. There are other institutions where they have so much facility for economic development, like the Mormon Church. They, you know, I know Prabhupada liked very much the Spiritual Sky Incense in Los Angeles years ago. It was the number one incense business in the United States of America. The Wall Street Journal came and did an interview. Dhanavir Maharaj was a householder at the time, wearing a business suit and going out and selling with his Sika in a business suit, going out and selling Spiritual Sky. The Wall Street Journal did a story on it. And Prabhupada liked very much. They'd have some nice lecture tapes or bhajan tapes, packing the incense in the factory and Krishna Katha going on constantly. Those things were great. Huh?
The packaging was great.
Yeah, wonderful packaging, Krishna. And yeah, it was wonderful. Some devotees said, oh, this is Maya, you know, making money. You know what Prabhupada said? He said, anything that makes $1 million a year for Krishna is not Maya. So, yeah, we're going through a very difficult period of our society, there's no doubt. But if a devotee really loves Prabhupada, he'll do the austerity if he has to. I know when I was a brahmachari for 14 years, and brahmachari life is just the greatest nectar, but my GBC asked me to get married. So I, always being faithful to following him, I went ahead and did that. And then they asked me, well, now you need to get a job, you know, be an ideal householder and get a job. And wow, get a job. All right. So I went out and did that, and it was definitely an austerity for me. But I felt good because now I'm showing, because most people we preach to are working jobs. So now I can show by my example how you can work a job, how you can, and the first thing you did was give that donation to the temple every month. My paycheck came in, the first thing is money to the temple. You see, even though I didn't have much money, I was being paid peanuts. But still I gave a fixed monthly donation to the temple no matter what. That was my first business. So I felt good that it's difficult. It was really difficult. But I tell you, that associate, but anyway, I did it because I wanted to show an example that one can work a job and be a devotee. And in fact, the first job I had, they put me on the midnight shift, 11 till 8. And I was very dedicated to going to Mangalarti. For 14 years as a brahmachari, Mangalarti, Mangalarti, Mangalarti. There was no question I'm not going to Mangalarti. Now, oh my God, how am I going to go to Mangalarti? And I had this burning desire, I have to go to Mangalarti. How can I miss Mangalarti? So I went to reported in, the boss said, you know, nobody wants to work the night shift, so we don't mind if you take an extra long lunch break every night. So it was perfect. I take my lunch break at 4 o'clock. I'll go pick up my wife at the apartment, go to the temple, attend Mangalarti, leave her at the temple for the morning program, go back to work by 5:15. And I was in good shape with Krishna, in good shape with my boss also. And then later on, I had another position. This time I was working part-time. And I said, you know, I'm Tilak. Tilak is me. I am Tilak. And going like this, waking me up my Tilak and going to work, this isn't me. You know, I am Tilak. They say Toys R Us. Tilak is me. I am Tilak. You know what I mean? We kind of feel that way. You know, without Tilak, I'm not even me. You know. So one day, as a heckler, that I'm just going to wear Tilak to work. I'm just going to depend on Krishna. I wear my Tilak to the office. I was doing telesales for MCI Corporation. You know, the old telephone company that broke up AT&T. I was doing telesales for them, and the day I wore my Tilak, I was selling like that. Making big money for the company that day. My supervisor, who get paid based on my performance, he said, Mr. Bridge, or whatever he said, I don't know what that is on your forehead, but from now on you must wear it every day. Because he saw how fired up I got when I wore the tilak. This tilak, I was a new person with my tilak on. I was empowered when I had my tilak on. You could see, he's not his normal Steve, Mr. Steve Bridges, not the same he was yesterday. Now with his tilak on, he's selling like hotcakes. He's really on fire with his tilak on, so you must wear it every day, whatever it is. So in this way, you know, Of course, when Krishna gave me a chance to get out of it and just do full-time preaching, I did. But when I was in there, I did it in a Krishna-conscious way, and Krishna blessed me for them. So sometimes we have to do these austerities. It's not easy. I mean, it's not easy. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur did it. It's not. Do you think it's fun working for the British government? It's not like, you know, it's pretty. But he did it. He was so expert that he was their top employee. You know that they, you know that train that you've been to his house there, and you know why that train is there? That the British government built that train just so he could come. That was built for Bhaktivinoda Thakur by the British. That's how much they valued him as an employee. You see? So if you're out there working, be the best employee, become the CEO. We want our devotees to become the leaders in every sphere, you know? If you're a musician, become the number of the top musician. If you're a novelist, become the top novelist. Whatever you're doing in the material world, you should become the best. We want devotees to be the leaders in every single sphere of activity. Politics, music, drama, in every single sphere of activities. We want the devotees to be the leaders. That will help our movement to go forward. So for some reason, you're out there, well, be an exemplary person in that field. If you have to work right now temporarily, be exemplary in that field. Whatever you're doing, as a businessman, as an employee, as a professional, be exemplary, like Bhaktivinoda Thakur was, you see. And just see the beautiful writings. And just see when another secret is in this regard. Whatever spare time you have, use it completely for Krishna. It's like the father, he gives his kid an allowance. Like I got a nickel when I was a little kid. Nickel a week. Wow, big nickel. A nickel. So, if the father sees, oh, this, he's just spending it on baseball cards and bubble gum, or I just keep giving him a nickel. The brother, he's investing in his savings account. Well, he's going to get a dime every week because he's putting it in a savings account. So, if you will take whatever free time Krishna is giving you in the middle of, you know, your working lay, whatever free time, you use it for service, for preaching, for reading, for chanting, you know, you use it to the best of your ability, sincerely squeezing every spare minute you can for Krishna's service. Guess what your father Krishna will do with your free time allowance? He'll increase it. And it happened to me. Krishna just gave me complete free time. That's all I do now is preach. Even though I'm a married man, here's my wife, you see? Krishna Priya Devi Dasi. I'm just traveling and preaching. That's all I do. And Krishna is covering everything by His grace. That's all. I just travel and preach all over the world. So, but I was out there working the job, but using every spare minute for Krishna. So the key is, whatever time you have, use it for Krishna. Just be sincere within your heart. Be Krishna conscious and share it with everybody as much as you can in all times, all places, and all circumstances. And then, Prabhu, in any condition, you can become a powerful spiritual revolutionary and taste the sweetest happiness.
Why do you think our movement hasn't made much progress in the Varnashram and the simple living?
I'd say that the big problems I see in our movement is, I see the biggest problem is the lack of loving relationship. We're too selfish. We're too caught up in our own little egos. I see that's the biggest problem in our society. We don't know how to open our hearts to each other. And because of that, things aren't moving forward. So I would really attribute it to them. And we're too impersonal still in ISKCON. We're too impersonal. We need to open up to each other more loving exchanges. And when that's there, then we'll be able to advance. Our chanting will take off like a rocket. We'll go deeper and deeper, and everything will just come. It's really due to a lack of quality loving relationships. That's why that seminar I gave is a very important seminar. Loving relationships. It really comes down to loving relationships.
When was this?
Huh?
When did you have this?
In Sydney.
Oh.
Just like a couple of weeks ago. Mm-hmm.
We should have one here.
Hmm?
We should have one here. We should have one here.
Ah. Well, I'm giving a little tidbits of it here. It's a very important thing. The more we can have loving relationships. It was very well attended. I mean, usually in the Bhagavatam class there, it's like this, just a small handful. But when I there in the seminar, the place was packed. How many people were coming? 150 or something. The temple room was packed for the seminar.
What is the format?
Well, I'll be honest, I spoke a little bit and there was so many questions. I had people writing questions down and I had a huge stack of questions. Most of it were just answering questions. We spoke basically on those two verses in the Upadeshamrita, on the six loving exchanges. It was really based on the six loving exchanges. Devotees just wanted to know, everyone wants to have loving relationships. They want to overcome the difficulties, the interpersonal difficulties. So they were asking a lot of sometimes very almost embarrassing questions, but the good thing was, if you're anonymous, it was on a piece of paper. You didn't have to be recognized as the person who asked the question. So they were asking all kinds of questions that people wouldn't normally ask publicly about this thing and that thing, getting along with devotees. It was nice. We actually have it. If you give me a disk or a flash drive, I can give you a copy of it. I have it in my computer. I'll be here today. You can give me I can give you a copy of the seminar if you want. Okay?
We have some devotees who are professionals, those are working jobs. But some devotees do find difficulty in this situation. Some are very happy and are pursuing Krishna consciousness. What would be the reason?
Different natures is one thing. Some people have a very rabbinical nature. They're not inclined at all to work in the material world. It's very difficult for them. It's a great austerity. Some people have a more of a Vaishya nature. And they love to get out there and make money. It's just different natures. That's part of it. Different natures are there. Even in the material life, I know I never liked to work job. My brother, he was very enthusiastic in working job. I had a very different nature between me and my brother, for example. He was working at a car wash, washing the cars. He'd come home and tell me about all the interchanges he had with his manager. I mean, he was so enlivened working at that car wash. I was going, wow, that's not me. And now he's a big CEO of the corporation, doing some big startup corporation now in Austin. He's a big businessman. That was his nature. My nature was philosophy. I was thinking things like music and philosophy, higher consciousness, spirituality. Those things interested me, not making money. Different natures. Yeah, but this Prabhu has amazingly, very nicely pointed out, in a Vedic society, you see, the Brahmins, they also were. They are maintained just by giving the knowledge. Prabhupada gives the example of that Brahmin in, what is the name of that town? Krishna Nagar. Near Mayapur, Krishna Nagar. Prabhupada gives the example, there was one Brahmin in Krishna Nagar. And he was in impoverished condition. So the king heard that name is Krishna Chandra. The king, Krishna Chandra, was king. So the king, Krishna Chandra, he heard there was an impoverished Brahmin in his kingdom. He was very disturbed. No, my Brahmins must all be opulent, well maintained. Where is this impoverished Brahmin? They said, oh, he's teaching. He lives under a tamarind tree there on the edge of this town. He teaches the students there under a tamarind tree. He lives under a tree. So he came out there to say, Brahmana, I've heard you're impoverished. I've come to give you all opulence. He said, what do you mean, impoverished? Don't you see, I'm living under this tamarind tree. See, my students, they come, they bring a palm of rice. My wife cooks the rice. She takes this very nice tamarind leaf. She boils it with the rice. We're living very opulently here under this tamarind tree. What do you mean, poverty stricken? I don't need any help, you see. But see, in a Vedic society, the king would make sure that the Brahmins, they were all maintained nicely. Everyone is maintained nicely in a Vedic society.
But the Brahmins were, you gave the example of the Brahmana, but he was not taking anything from the king. And he lived very simply.
The point is, they lived very simply. Even Chanakya Pandit, he lived very simply in a hut outside the palace. The Brahmin is not interested in material acquisition. He just wants to live very simply so he can focus his life on Krishna consciousness. He doesn't be entangled with material advancement.
Then we are seeing in ISKCON where they are trying to implement their system. The devotees have TV in their ashram.
Yeah, well, that's sudra.
Okay, so then how can
we see that problem. All right, the temple sets up a facility and maintain the Brahmins, the Bajaris. And instead of being real Brahmins, they're just shudras, you know, wearing Brahmins threads. Watching television, mundane television in the ashram. They put a TV in their apartment and watch mundane television. So how can we expect the movement's going to go forward and Krishna's going to bless us if devotees don't even follow the basic regulative principles? That's a fact.
So
Krishna can easily, he can give his mercy, he can withdraw his mercy also from our movement. If the temples are maintaining, giving simply facilities for material sense gratification, this is the same disgust that Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakura had. He was very disgusted. They had started off in a very austere way, developing the mission, and they get this huge marble temple in Calcutta. And he saw devotees becoming carried away by the material opulence, getting carried away, and he was very disgusted with it. He was very, very disgusted with it. You should see by that book now by Bhaktivikasa Swami. It's unbelievable the things that he was saying about his own disciples. He was so disgusted with them from that thing.
So implementing Varna Ashram Dharma is difficult because we are not coming.
Because we're not pure. That's right.
Exactly.
It's very difficult.
And we want some opulence.
Therefore, in one sense, that's why we have to go out and work, because it purifies us, actually. It's another point. It purifies us. It's an austerity that purifies us. It's a bit. Any other question? Everyone satisfied now? Jai. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.